Well, let's take a look at this. A third party like Rudy Giuliani running a back channel foreign policy with another country that's separate from the normal U.S. diplomatic contacts, that's actually not unprecedented in U.S. history. Some or many U.S. presidents have been known to use close friends, associates, or aides to make these contacts. But using a personal lawyer, you could say, is different, almost unprecedented. And using that person to, in effect, extort a foreign country for the sake of a president's personal political gain, .. if you see where I'm going here. Live to Washington, someone writing about this, Peter Greer, Washington editor, longtime political observer in Washington for the Christian Science Monitor, csmonitor.com. Welcome, Peter. I think it is important to remind ourselves, though, that just the idea of another party who's not the Secretary of State and may not be officially the main U.S. conduit is not unprecedented, huh?
That's right. There's been a lot of time devoted to the discovery of the fact that there was a back channel. That's because many of the people involved in Ukraine policy were surprised to find out that there was this secret stuff going on that was kind of behind their backs. But just because they were surprised doesn't mean that it's unprecedented. It's happened often in U.S. history.
And so give us some examples.
Well, you know, I think the most recent obvious example is that Henry Kissinger, in essence, was a back channel. He was, of course, officially in the government. He was Richard Nixon's national security advisor originally. And Nixon used him basically to work around Secretary of State William Rogers to negotiate with the Soviets and the Chinese about various big policy changes that the normal diplomatic process didn't really support or couldn't move fast enough to support.
Of course, one could say what Kissinger was schooled in international relations was not a rookie. Giuliani would be, but I know you're going to tell me, well, some other go-betweens were not necessarily schooled in international diplomacy the way that Kissinger was.
First about Kissinger, you're absolutely right. Of course, he was extreme. Of course, he was doing this because he was perhaps more skilled than the Secretary of State, and the president himself had a pretty good idea about what he wanted to do in foreign affairs. But in history, there have been people who were not in the government. There have been people somewhat analogous to Rudy Giuliani. You know, the obvious one is FDR used Harry Hopkins to, in essence, negotiate with all of the allies in World War II. He was the chief representative of the U.S. to William Churchill and to Stalin. And, you know, that kind of went behind the State Department, and they were surprised as well. But that's because FDR, again, kind of knew what he wanted to do, and he was just using a back channel as the most efficient way of getting what he wanted.
But I don't recall, at least not in our lifetimes, the Secretary of State, who seemed to go along with this, acquiesced and did not back up his own diplomats.
That's true. So William Rogers in the Nixon era, for instance, was pretty upset about Kissinger going around behind his back. I believe he eventually resigned on that issue, though I'm not completely certain about that. And again, you know, remember, this is just about the existence of the back channel. We need to focus on what they were actually doing. In these past instances, a lot of times they were doing things that were really in the interests of the United States. The question for Rudy Giuliani is, was what he was doing in the interests of the United States, or was it in the political interest of President Donald Trump? That's the issue.
And, of course, a Trump partisan could argue. I haven't heard many argue this, but it just occurred to me. Might have helped the president's personal interests, but the U.S. may have an interest in not alienating Russia and precipitating worse relations just to appease Ukraine. Now, that is not the dominant foreign policy view. It might be an unpopular foreign policy view. Maybe Tulsi Gabbard might have that view on the Democratic side. I'm reaching out here just to play some chess moves, but to make the point that this stuff can get murky.
Well, exactly. And I have to say, I've been a little bit surprised by the fact that they haven't just switched over and gone to, well, what he did all that, but it was perfectly fine. It was right. It was in the interest of the United States. I mean, you know, to some extent, you have seen leaks in which some senators say, yeah, well, there was a quid pro quo. We need to just argue that it was perfectly fine. And not impeachable. But, of course, the president hasn't been willing to go that far. He's been defending himself along every step of the way.
And the other big difference, I mean, let's remember Reagan and Gorbachev after Margaret Thatcher seemingly said, we can deal with this guy. And then the early days of Russia after the Soviet Union, Yeltsin. I mean, hardly anyone that I can recall went ahead and castigated presidents, Republican or later Democratic Clinton, because Russia was seen to be more malleable to U.S. policy goals and indeed even democratizing at that time.
Well, it was. I mean, we didn't really know how the post-Cold War world was going to shape up. And also, remember, Russia was quite weak when it emerged from the ashes of the Soviet Union. Its economy was in complete shambles. Its military fell apart. So to some extent, it was a charity case. It is not that way today.
By the way, for anyone who's interested in that stuff, I notice on Der Spiegel online, the German news magazine's English edition, there was a long interview with Gorbachev, which I haven't completely read yet, but fascinating. Of course, on the occasion of the fall of the Berlin Wall a few days ago, 30th anniversary and all that. So anyway, one can differentiate between other presidents using other individuals other than officially the Secretary of State as a back channel to another country. And this case, because Giuliani is seen as doing the president's personal business for political gain. And of course, the other part of the puzzle is that it was done purely to influence an American election for Trump's benefit and betterment, and this time in the future.
That's correct, Murray. There's been a lot of ink and airtime expended on Rudy Giuliani and his personality and his various foibles. You know, in many ways, that is just a distraction. It is about the policy, and it is about President Trump's intent.
Although it probably doesn't help Giuliani's case. He's like a bull in a china shop whenever he's on the air, or darn near.
No, it does not, but it you know, it gets all of us excited, and it's a shiny object we can chase and devote airtime as opposed to putting together the dots of everything that's going on.
And by the way, to our listeners, talking to Peter Greer, Washington editor, Christian Science Monitor, csmonitor.com. Let me ask you, Peter, as a longtime follower of politics and writing for the Christian Science Monitor, just kind of curious, when Hunter Biden took that gig for the Ukrainian company, did it all perhaps maybe not shock you, but did you remember thinking at all maybe this could go badly? It might hurt the vice president if he had future political ambitions? Or you didn't think of that?
Absolutely. You know, why did Hunter Biden have that job except because he was the son of the vice president of the United States? That is, I like the formulation that the New York Times columnist Russ Tothot uses, which is what you have here is soft corruption versus hard corruption. Soft corruption in the sense of it's kind of not really putting directly affecting U.S. policy. It's kind of the sort of thing that elites do all the time. It's how they raise money for their foundations. The Clinton Foundation, for instance, you know, raises money in some pretty unfortunate corners of the world. But then against that, you have the Trump actions, which allegedly are a much harder form of corruption. They're just basically, they're confronting it directly. You do this for me and I will do this for you. And so in that sense, I think Trump, his supporters are kind of tired of the soft corruption. And so they think the hard corruption is fine.
Now, just to revisit, and this came up this morning in a conversation, the prosecutor in Ukraine, whom Vice President Biden, the Obama-Biden administration, wanted removed, and this was in concert with our European allies, had he, though, in fact, investigated Hunter Biden's company?
I believe they opened an investigation into Hunter Biden's company. And by the way, I don't want to imply that Hunter Biden has done anything wrong or anything illegal, either in Ukraine or the United States. I'm just saying that, you know, it's kind of money falls into your pocket when you're in that position. And, you know, is that the way the world works? Maybe. Is it right? Maybe not. You know, that's something to discuss.
Yeah.
But it is not the same sort of thing that is happening on the other side.
But that prosecutor was widely seen as really not being a thorough corruption investigator. And, of course, we had the previous Ukrainian president who was seemingly pro-Moscow. So there you go.
That's correct. I mean, if you start looking at the daisy chain of Ukrainian prosecutors that have come and gone in recent years, you really start to be unable to distinguish one from the other. You know, the one that they have now seems to be against corruption and you know, so we'll hope that he can help clean up the country.
I do want to make one final point here, and this again came up in the conversation we had here at the radio station this morning, but the EU, European Union, European organizations have been after corruption in a number of Eastern European countries, not just Ukraine, former Soviet satellites, not necessarily just republics from the former Soviet Union, like Romania, and I believe a high-ranking official recently got jailed over there. I mean, this has been a European thing about the Eastern Europeans coming into the organization. In some cases, corrupt politicians have received EU funds, and now there's been an investigation of that.
That's true. I mean, you know, in many ways, they're dealing with a part of the world that's still suffering from the hangover of the collapse of the Soviet Union. They're young countries in a lot of ways, or at least young, newly free countries, and so they're developing a democratic traditions and the rule of law, in essence, from scratch. And, you know, that takes some time.
Nice talking to you. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Enjoyed it. Peter Greer, Washington editor, Christian Science Monitor, csmonitor.com, with us live here on Delaware.